Yes, sir.
My name is Suleiman. I just want to share something with you. I'm from San Francisco, and I work with the Brotherhood of Muhammad, Brother Keith, and Archbishop Noble, my mentor. And some of us, you know, we need that push, but you got to push yourself. You got to get motivated in this. You got to live and die this. This is not a meeting. This is a movement. This is something that took place. Until you develop that, you swallow that, and you digest it, then you just come into a meeting. That's the difference between great leaders who fought to death. You got to fought to the end of this. You can't get time. You got to, when he say we need to do this, then you got to be willing not to just put your hand up, but you got to be willing to say, when we going to start, what do I need to do, what position I need to take. You may not be good at doing the talking, but you may be good at hitting the streets. You may be good at doing this. You may be good at doing that, but you got to find out where you fit. Right? And find out whatever position that you fit, then you got to step to it and be willing to do it. But you got to be committed. You got to make a commitment to the commitment. Just like, you know, it's like, that's our brother. That's your children. Him today, you tomorrow. And it ain't sunk in right here yet. Because when we come to the meetings, it's we're trying to sink it in, but you got to sink it in, but you got to move with action. There's progress, there's process, and you got to move in the process, and everybody got to take charge and say, okay, I'm ready to do this. Yeah. You don't come this week, don't come that week, don't come this week. You got to make a commitment to coming and doing to say, I'm ready, what I need to do, I'm good at this, this is what we're going to do, because the recall has to start. We did Proposition GNF, they told us we had to have 8,000 signatures in 8 days. 8 days. We took them to 12,000, 11,000, how much, Archbishop?
400 something.
And it was rain, snow, or shine. It didn't matter. Sisters, brothers, children, you may do some phone banking. You're going to have to develop a strategy. You're going to say, look, let's do it. Let's get it done. We're going to call on phones. We're going to do this. We're going to survey. But we're going to make a move at doing it. And guess what? It don't take 100 people. It takes 10 dedicated people that's 10 dedicated opposed to 100 people that's dead and asleep. Dead and asleep, 100 people don't mean nothing. You know what I'm saying? So, which one do you just call yourself to be? That's the question. Where do you lie in this right now, sitting in here? When you leave here, are you just going to be like, it sounds good, I'm coming back to the meeting?
Come on.
Or like I'm going to church and I'm jumping up and I'm happy like Samuel? Which one are you? Are you a warrior? You warriors in here, you kings and queens. You're soldiers, but you got to take a soldier attitude, and you got to move towards it. You know, if you're from Hayward, you can be from Frisco, Hunters Point, wherever you might be from. Don't claim nothing. You're from the earth, brothers and sisters. So ain't nothing geographical in this. You are from the earth. So it is your job, it is your duty, it is your commitment that's going to make this happen. So when you leave here today, you don't need to leave here talking about, okay, I'm coming back next week. You need to start. If you really got to formulate something in the corners and say, okay, where do we need to start? Let's make this move. Let's start right now. I can be back here when? Today, when we got to be tomorrow. That's how we do it in San Francisco. When we call the phone, we leave at that given moment. Stop doing what you're doing. What we need to be, Christopher? Boom. What we need to be, Brother Keith? Boom. We there. That's a commitment. Just like you go to your job. This is a lifetime job for you.
Sisters and brothers, our brother actually was addressing really what's next on the items just to consider that this is not a meeting, this is a movement. A wise man once said that all life begins with motion, and after motion, then comes order. Well, we've been moving. We had some critical planning meetings on this week. Our brother Tony Coleman, I don't see him here right now, along with Dr. Tosco and others, along with Sister Diana. And we've gathered together the various organizations and are gathering together the various organizations that have a specific concern about this particular issue. And so we agreed that we would gather on Monday evenings at 6 o'clock and to join us, and we invite No Justice, No Bart. We invite all of those groups that are working to achieve justice in the murder of Oscar Grant, because the reality is, in most instances, we agree. But we want to sit at a table and find out if we disagree, where and how. How do we present the best foot forward? And so that's Monday night at 6 o'clock to the organizers. You can communicate with me directly or with Tony Coleman. And join us on Monday evening at 5296 Foothill Boulevard, a little coffee shop on the corner, for organizers to help us to be more focused in our effort. Brother Suleiman has it right, in that the challenge that we face requires a movement. And one of the things that you should know, as I was talking with the brother from the Revolutionary Bookstore, is we're confronting a system that does not want to see the community move itself. It's a system that wants to move the community. But in truth, if we really live in democracy, then the government would move according to the desires of the people. But the reality is, government rarely moves according to the desire of the people. Government does what it does, and every now and then invite a few people. And in truth, they're shocked when people show up. So if we go into the city council meeting, this entire town hall, I can already tell you what will happen as soon as we walk in the door. The council people would begin to inquire one with the other, what are they doing here? What are they doing here? Isn't this a public meeting? If it's a public meeting, one would think that the council in whatever city would enjoy to see us come. But the reality is that business is done. In these cities in which we're living, and we have very little knowledge often of what is done and what's the result of what's been done. I'll give you an example. In a few days, you will hear a report about Oakland policing. And what you will hear from this particular report is, you hear a lot about Measure Y in Oakland. You heard of it before? And I hear politicians tell us all the time that there's some kind of police officer in Oakland called a problem-solving officer. Well, first, right off the top, anytime I'm pulled over by law enforcement and they come to my car window to ask me for my license and registration, I ask every one of them, is there a problem officer? You all have that experience? Now, if there's something wrong, any and every police officer is supposed to help solve a problem. Officer, my house has been robbed. Can you help me with my problem? Officer, there's a fire on the street. Can you help us with this problem? Officer, a car has been stolen. Can you help us with this problem? I have a hard time understanding where they came up with this idea of calling some particular police officer a problem-solving officer. Come on. But now, in order to meet the political demand that there be more police rather than efforts to stop crime from occurring in the first place by improving in education, improving in social programs, improving in services to the poor, the city of Oakland has paid $27 million for what they call problem-solving officers. Well, what you're going to hear in the report probably next week will be these facts. That out of the $27 million spent for 63 extra officers called problem-solving officers, that those 63 officers have not solved any problems. Now, how many jobs could we have produced with $27 million? How many services could have been provided with $27 million? How many children could have improved their education with $27 million? But when the political will says, back the police by any call, whenever there's a crime spike, many times the call is, we need more police, but Jerry Brown actually had it right. Jerry Brown, when he was not an elected official, between offices, made a statement at KPFA Radio, which was repeated in the Wall Street Journal, and he said, and I'm just about quoting him, he said, whenever there's a spike in crime and an incarceration binge, that it is not a result
of an increase in crime, he said, what you're seeing is the result of the failure of capitalism. So we're looking at capitalism failing every day, aren't we?
Yes, sir.
I picked up a paper. I went to Starbucks this morning. Got to apologize to my sons. They had their coffee shop, but I wasn't in the city. So I went to Starbucks and picked up the paper. And it said that some 600 or more thousand people lost their jobs last month. It said that right now there are 13 million people unemployed. Right now. So now, what could have been done with $27 million other than hire 63 non-problem-solving officers? They said the report will reveal that those 63 extra officers did nothing for the people of the city of Oakland. Nothing. But they voted in these processes. How to manage these resources of public discussion? If we're not at the table in the discussion, then they do what they do. And if they do what they do without hearing our voice, at a certain point, that's our fault. They should at least hear our voice. Do you agree?
Yes, sir.
Now, if they disagree with our voice, then it will demonstrate what we see happening now. That when we put our voice and heart to the issue and lay truth on the table, a moral line is being drawn in the sand. And either those that are voting in policy are going to step on the side of right, or those that vote in policy will stand on the side of wrong. But your and my job is to draw the moral line in the sand. So tens of millions of dollars go to waste. But it is now the duty of our movement to make the line known. There's a line drawn out there. We saw it a few weeks ago when the unfortunate incident where Lavelle Mixon shot four police officers, or more than four, but four were killed. Of course, we're human beings, so we quite naturally sent condolences to the police chief, to the mayor of the city, and to the families, and through them to the families of those that gave their lives attempting to perform their duty as police officers. But now let's look at the gross difference between the way law enforcement responded to Lavelle Mixon and the way there was a response issued on yesterday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where three officers were killed. The shooter, a young Caucasian man, 22 years old, who, for reasons unknown to us, shot at these officers when they came into his home. But what intrigued me was this. At the funeral of the officers here in Oakland, Lavelle Mixon was called a devil. And any that said to his grandmother, who grieved, "We love you, and we want to help you through this time of grief," those that looked at Lavelle Mixon's family as also being a victim, they didn't know that their grandson would commit the acts that were committed. They were suffering. When Pastor Humphreys and I visited with them, hardly anybody had given them any attention. One of the nonprofit groups in our city who goes to the aid of murder victims went to their home, and the nonprofit group is now being threatened by those who feel like they're somehow showing support for, quote, a cop killer. But when I read the article about the Pittsburgh incident, which, by the way, I have yet to see it on television news. And I don't watch a lot of television. Is it on there? But it seems to be somewhat a muted conversation. They're not talking a lot about it because this young man that shot these officers
I picked up, I said, I got to find out now because they're not saying it, so let me look it up. So I pull up my little internet on my phone to discover that not only are they not demonizing this young man, they're describing his life in such a way that gives him humanity. You all understand what I'm saying. They said that he was after getting his GED. And when he completed his GED, Mr. Kowalski, he joined the U.S. Marines. Said that he was dishonorably discharged from the Marines. Gave his bio one day later. Said that he was dishonorably discharged because he and his girlfriend broke up, and I guess he broke ranks and left the base to go see his girlfriend, and they dishonorably discharged him. He comes home at that point, dishonorably discharged, and now he's a troubled young man. He's been single for 2 years, living with his mother, and I think his grandmother. When they went in to get him, there was a 4-hour standoff. I don't think Lavelle Mixon was given 4 minutes. And when I saw the video footage on one of the news stations from a helicopter and the SWAT team rushed the door, you know, I'm in that neighborhood all the time. So I went to go and see what happened with my eyes in terms of the building spaces and whatnot. And right off the top, when I walked by and saw that big window, I said, the police ran up on this? They ran up on this big window, knowing that bullets fly through windows. And the way that they were, it was just an unwise tactical decision to have what you believe to be a gunman in a room that you can't see, that you run up on a window, kick in a door that you can't see beyond. That's why generally the tendency is to take your time, secure the premises, remove others from harm's way. When SWAT and others went into 74th, they didn't do that. There were innocent people in the apartment. There were men, women, and children. The bullets that would eventually strike people, some of them may have gone through walls. Y'all with me now? But in Pennsylvania, 4-hour standoff. 5 hours. And they took him alive. It's a tactical difference, is my point. And the question becomes, is the life of black young men considered valuable? Is the black community considered valuable enough to take the necessary precautions to deal with a shooter incident? In the case on 74, the answer was no. In the case of Brother Oscar, the answer was no. In the case in Pennsylvania, that young man's life was considered valuable enough that a day later we got a biography of his life struggles. In their insult to us, they went after whether or not Oscar had a record, where his father is, whether or not he had used any drugs. Well, wait a minute. All that has nothing to do with it. Your murder of a young man on the BART platform and the terrorizing of everybody else on the train. Is black life and even black leadership valuable? So when the funeral was held for the four officers, a funeral, of course, and I have to say I've never been to a multiple death funeral before. So I know that death certainly causes grief for any one of us. And to witness four caskets in one funeral has to be exceedingly painful. So we want you to know that our thoughts here are not to increase the pain on the loved ones of those officers. But I want you to walk with me just for a moment. The shooting incident occurred on 74th and MacArthur. Our council person, Desley Brooks, probably didn't sleep for a few days, because I would imagine, without even being there, that she spent multiple hours on that block, multiple hours with the police, to demonstrate the responsible deed of any good council person. That if law enforcement officers are killed in your district, certainly elected officials would have compassion on the city employees that lost their lives in the commission of their duty. So, Councilperson Brooks, I don't have to ask. I already know she was there. I already know she was there to respond to those on 74th who felt threatened by what happened, by the sight of any kind of shooting of this nature, to offer services and programs to those that live on and near 74th. I didn't have to be in a meeting to know that. I already know that she was there. When those officers were killed, condolences came from all over the city. Councilperson Brooks organized a vigil to demonstrate condolence from the community and from the people of the city on the Tuesday before the funeral. We already know that she was there. But when I went to the funeral of the four officers, and I read the program of who would be involved, when I looked in the newspaper and saw that the mayor of the city, for whom the officers work, was disinvited from participation in a funeral. Sister Brooks, did the city pay for that funeral? It was a public funeral, or a public memorial, technically. I think the families had their own private funerals. Right? The family had their own private funerals. This was a public venture. And now here the city, who elects its mayor as its official spokesperson. That's part of the duty of the mayor of the city. Y'all with me now? I wonder if Jerry Brown were mayor, would he have been disinvited from speaking at that funeral?
Come on, right now.
I wonder if Don Perotta were mayor, would he have, and I don't even want to put that word together. If Don Perotta were in elected office, would he have been disinvited from that funeral to speak? So as people came to address their concern, I was concerned. Then somebody showed me a news article that said that the mayor had been disinvited. I said, okay, I better listen more carefully now to what's being said. And for Governor Schwarzenegger to show compassion, took him one day to make it down to the city of Oakland. Governor Schwarzenegger has not spoken a word about the murder of Oscar Grant. Is that right? Diane Feinstein. Barbara Boxer. Jerry Brown. I'm sorry, I shouldn't disrespect their titles. They have titles. Senator Feinstein. Senator Boxer. Attorney General Brown had nothing to say and have nothing to say when poor black people suffer. So they politicized the funeral, the memorial. The poor chief of police barely had a word to speak. And one spokesman said, well, we want to help the mayor get a new chief.
Sure did.
This is a uniformed police officer talking. Now, I would later be told he's retired, but if you're a uniformed police officer and you're calling for a new chief, you're saying something.
Y'all with me now?
Yes, sir.
That we refuse as a department to really give any order or respect to this black officer or this black chief. And so now the challenge becomes, when we have to address the culture of policing, if there's a black chief, will the rank and file officers give their obedience or their allegiance to the black chief?
No, sir.
Well, they wouldn't give allegiance to the black mayor.
Right.
What makes you think they'll show any allegiance to the black chief? And so, black elected officials in the city of Oakland were just woefully disrespected. Now, they may not want to say these things, because who wants to feel like you're stepping into a time of grief for staff that work for you? But the reality is that black elected officials were woefully disrespected at that funeral. Congressperson Lee was sitting there.
Come on now.
Councilperson Brooks was sitting there. Mayor Dellums was sitting there. Supervisor Keith Carson was sitting there. In fact, the only one whose name I heard even mentioned in the services was Councilperson Larry Reed, whose shoulder they cried on, who gave them hugs throughout the process, and we appreciate that, Councilperson Reed. However, the fact that our leadership was written out of such a significant moment should not go unnoticed by us. We want to thank Attorney John Burris for his very strong commentary in pointing out the wrong. If somebody doesn't point it out, it won't be pointed out. And as Brother Reverend Carey said before, we've gotten to the point that we're tired of being sick and tired. Somebody must, somebody can, and somebody will stand and tell the truth in this kind of hour, because when darkness prevails, we are duty bound to hold up some light. That's why we're here. There are members of the Grant family that are here with us and would like to share some of their concerns and thoughts. But one of the things that we certainly want to be clear about is the road to justice is not an easy one. And those in systems of authority really don't want to be confronted by it. I think it was Thomas Jefferson who said that he trembled for his country when he reflected that God is just and that his justice would not sleep forever. In other words, we won't be asleep forever. When there is no justice, then we can really know no joy. So when folk wonder, why is our community always outraged by matters of police brutality? It's because we have never been given justice with the authorities of this country. Let's be clear. There's a culture in policing that must be changed. It is very difficult to change the culture of authority when those in authority feel that all they've got to do to maintain their authority is pull out a club, pull out a taser, pull out a gun, and prove that authority by use of force. And the result is we have suffered for decades and, in fact, hundreds of years by the misuse and abuse of those that have had authority where we live. This is why Thomas Jefferson was trembling. He called himself a Christian, didn't he? Well, what person can say, I believe in Jesus, and I pray, and we go out and we lynch people by night and day, and we rape people by night and day? If you really believe in Jesus and in prayer, then at a certain point, Your heart should be affected. That's if there's any good in you. I have to say that. Because Jesus said that. He let it to be known after declaring that the truth would make us free, and they challenged him. How say you we be made free? Oh, I see who I'm dealing with. I, Jesus, this is modern translation, am dealing with some smart mouth fellas that they know of. So somewhere down the dialogue in the 8th chapter of John, he lets them know. If there were any truth in you, you would hear me. You can't hear me because there's no truth in you. In fact, he said, I know you. You are of your father. In the word, say it again. The pastors can say it. If I say it, they call me a reason. You are of your father what? I let the pastor say it for me.
Go ahead.
But now my point here is that when it got to that point, the fact was that there were some, and there are some in authority, that have no intention of doing right and good. But your and my obligation is to draw the line in the moral sand. We're going to make a demonstration right here, right now. One of the things we want when we make our caravan for justice is we want to show them, those that have suffered. Some would say, we're just touting off at the mouth. We don't know. We're just talking. We're not just talking. Brother Oscar was killed. We're not talking. Bart had shot 3 people in its history. We're not just talking. OPD shot 45 people from 2004 to 2008. One expert in policing told me that Oakland, particularly the city, not Bart, but the city police, has a cowboy mentality. And say that if you visit police headquarters, and I've been for business on many occasions, and you find the portraits of those that have lost their lives, the brother said to me, count how many portraits you see of them. Then go to the city of Berkeley, or San Leandro, or Haywood. And while Oakland is a larger city, how do you account for the difference in loss of life by their officers unless now we have to address the culture of the police department? Now remember, the Black Panther Party was born to address the culture of the police department. So most police departments have similar laws, similar methods, similar strategies. What's on paper is pretty much the same. But what comes out in practice can sometimes be a little different. So what he said to me was, if you go to Berkeley, 2 officers have lost their lives in decades. You go to San Leandro, I don't know when or if an officer has lost their life in San Leandro. You go into Hayward, you find the numbers are very small. But in Oakland, there's a huge wall of officers that have lost their lives, and many times it has to do with the approach that these officers bring us for law enforcement in our community. And so this matter of justice is why we take the caravan Wednesday. We're going back to Sacramento. Wednesday. We're going back to Sacramento. We will see members of the assembly and their staffs to really begin to draw the contradictions in effort to produce policy change. They will know when we leave Sacramento our support for AB 312. They will know we're coming back on the day that they're going to dialogue on. They will know our desire to see police chiefs held accountable for their brutalization of some of their officers that go without discipline. It's ungodly that you can set somebody up and make them spend the rest of their life in jail as a law enforcement officer and the chief help you in the cover-up. That's ungodly. The chief should be willing to stand for right and justice, not for the cold blue line, but for right and justice. We need legislation that compels the chief to do what is right. And so, family, Jefferson trembled because he knew one day somebody would rise up and start speaking truth. The government and those in authority have always held this fear in America. That's why Jefferson trembled. That's why Pharaoh set about a wise plan in the Bible. He said, come on, let us deal wisely with them. Then he set about a plan to destroy all the boy bands because they feared that nature would give birth to those that were unafraid. That nature would give birth to those that were willing to stand. That nature would give rise to those that would change the system. So when you go from the Old Testament all the way into the New Testament, you got the same fear operating. Yes. That a child would be born. They said, well, let's go kill them all under 2 years of age because they didn't want to see the birth of the baby king. Y'all with me now? They were afraid. Well, as it was, so it is. And so we now find law enforcement working to prevent the rise of a movement among us. Right now, the papers are working. I want to defend for a moment my brother in San Francisco, because you probably read his name in the paper 5 or 6 times this week. Brother Christopher Muhammad in the back, give him a big round of applause, my brother. I picked up the paper, and it said that they went to a town hall meeting in San Francisco. Well, we always have town halls in San Francisco. Why is that news now? Well, Man Newsom wants to run for governor. But he wants to run for governor while ignoring and participating in the poisoning of children in the Bayview Hunters Point by way of developers developing the land next to the housing project that is full of asbestos. As mayor, he has it and has had it in his authority to do something to protect the children. The Stop Lennar Action Movement have only made 2 requests of the city and county of San Francisco that I'm aware of. One is to check the health of those exposed to asbestos. Yeah. Now, asbestos is a serious matter. I went into a school, I think Burkhalter, one day with our school children at Muhammad University. They went to go play ball. And when I got there, some of the buildings had tents over them. I thought, you know, being from the hood, maybe it was a roach thing. That's what I thought. I mean, it was summer. I saw they're fumigating. And the children were out playing in the yard, and I walked over to the tented off building, and I saw men putting on space suits. So then I had to ask some questions. Now, I know those space suits are not to kill roaches. Why are you all putting on these space suits? And they told me because some tile had cracked in the school property. And as a result, that the building was subjected to asbestos exposure. Now I'm looking at men in spacesuits. A building tinted over to prevent the dust of some tile on the floor from exposing the children. I went over to Frick Junior High. Brother I went to college with is the principal now. And they were shutting off part of the building. Why are you shutting this part of it? They said because some tile had cracked. And part of the material ingredient of that tile contains asbestos. So they had to lock the building down until they cleared the dangers. Well, the town hall meeting in San Francisco was born in response to asbestos exposure from a developer that is attempting to build a multi-billion dollar property next to the housing project. First and foremost, you know if they put multi-billion dollars next to the housing project, they don't want the housing project there. Right off the top. Unless they can remove the people and remodel the project. So now, all of these things are happening as we speak. So when the community in San Francisco ask that the city and county government defend the children's health. The city and county government said no. Now what ended up happening was a moral line, as we spoke before, was being drawn in the sand by those in the community who were willing to stand on right. And you found that members of government, members of the community, some of the pastors, and others now were in a position to choose which side of this line are we going to stand. There are those that stood on right. And we owe them a big round of applause because they really got our town hall meeting kicked off to that stand. Then there are those who went the other way. The city and county government went the other way. They chose that rather than to use the health department to look into the health of some of the children who are suffering a variety of ailments. I heard a highly placed pastor say on the radio, he said, well, they were sick already. Maybe they're eating the wrong foods. Stop it. When you know the impact of asbestos. Yes, our community eats a lot of the wrong foods. We've been doing that. But that'll have nothing to do with a developer company exposing people day in, day out, night in, night out to asbestos that kills people. Y'all with me now? So we're thankful that Brother Christopher and others took a stand. Well, for that stand, they find themselves being evil spoken of, which is fine. Jesus said that if you stand for truth like him, you'd be evil spoken of. In fact, Bible says, rejoice and be exceedingly glad. They speak all manner of evil against you for his name's sake. Well, it's not just for the name, it's for the deeds of righteousness. It's for the nature of goodness in which we stand that causes the evil to lash out against you. So when I read the Chronicle, 2, 3, 4 days, Mateer and Ross. Well, who is that? They're gossip mongers. Y'all with me now? A gossip column in a city paper? Yes. Do they print what they want in order to project somebody else's point of view? Yes. Well, whose point of view are they projecting? They're projecting the point of view of somebody who wants to put a stop to a movement. Well, when I heard that my brother was being attacked in the paper, I didn't read the rest of the paper. But then lo and behold, I get to another article later in the day and discover that the Chronicle was at the funeral of Lavelle Nixon. And if you read the article, you would think that the only people at this funeral were wild-eyed, crazed rappers. So that would mean Lavelle Nixon, his family, 500, it was overflow of people who quite frankly were there to show their love for his grieving family. Don't we have a right to love his family? That we have a right to love him. He did wrong, but we have a right to love him. Is that right? So now I read in the article, you would think the only one there at the funeral was Lavelle Nixon, a crowd of 500 crazy people, and me. That's fine. But it negated the fact that there were nearly 30 pastors at the funeral. Y'all with me now? Who came to show support and love for the Nixon family. Sister Mary Nixon is a wonderful woman. Pastor was sitting with me when we met with her. Pastor, she told us that at her grandson's funeral, she was going to say to all his friends, come to his funeral with dignity. She said she was going to say to all of his friends, do not come to the funeral with your pants sagged. Did she tell us that? I think Sister was there with us, Sister Ann. She told us that she didn't want them coming to the funeral with t-shirts and a picture, because she wanted them to come to the funeral representing a certain kind of dignity for her grandson. Now, the beauty of it is, she didn't just want that. She did that. So I came to the funeral. I didn't see a t-shirt. 500 people. I didn't see a pair of sagging pants. This is the church grandmother, Mary Mixon, who's able and willing to go in and among young people and tell them what's right and what's wrong. She deserved our support at that funeral. She earned our love at that funeral. And to write it in anything other than that is evil.
That's right.
And so, sisters and brothers, our family from the Grant family is here, and they wanted to share some of their thoughts. One of the things that they're very clear about is they want to give President Obama an ear of what has happened here in Oakland.
Yes.
I'm sure that he already knows in some fashion, I would imagine, but we want to make it clear that when we are black elected officials, that we really ought not to be frightened to deal with the black community out of fear of what others may say. And so this is an issue that's very important to them. So I want you to join me in receiving our family. I don't know who wanted to do the speaking first. They're looking for Sister Diana.
And Tracy.
And Tracy. The family of Oscar Grant wanted to share some thoughts with us. They'll be in just a moment, but let's give them a big round of applause. And our brother, Oscar's uncle.